taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Well, hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Glad you could join me today. You know, there have been numerous examples of federal overreach, federal government attempting to lord itself over the states and over the citizens. And as I've been talking about this, one thing kept coming to mind, and that is a case from the Supreme Court called Prinz versus the United States. And I have on the line with me one of the litigants, Sheriff Richard Mack. Sheriff Beck, why don't you introduce yourself to my audience for just a minute, please?
All right. Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate being back with you, and thanks for your participation in the Holy Cause of Liberty. I was the sheriff of Graham County. Before that, I was a patrol officer, a school resource officer, detective, and undercover narcotics agent at Provo Police Department in Provo, Utah. I moved home to Arizona and ran for sheriff in 1988, was elected, re-elected in 1992. And in 1994, I became the first sheriff in American history to launch a major lawsuit against the federal government, in this particular case, the Clinton administration. So yes, I sued the Clintons, beat them, and lived to tell about it. That's probably the greatest miracle of my life. And after my second term, I lost my third term. And then I started writing books and traveling the country. I've been to all 50 states. And even though it's called the Prinz case, P-R-I-N-T-Z, Prinz was the second sheriff to file the lawsuit. I was the first. But he was actually the first heard at the district court in Helena, Montana. The trial docket was a lot busier in Tucson than it was in Helena. So his name actually got stuck to the case more than mine. But he and I were consolidated, and our names were brought together, the Mack Prinz case, when it went to the circuit court. So I don't know why it ever changed. I guess they just wanted one name to it. But anyway, they consolidated us because we were in the same circuit court when we went to the Ninth Circuit Court. So I spent 20 years in law enforcement. I've done everything in law enforcement imaginable. But what I found out is, in law enforcement, I became very disenchanted with government and with law enforcement in general, because I saw that we took an oath, that we all swore an oath. And I said to myself, why do we always call ourselves sworn personnel, the sworn personnel versus the non-sworn personnel, which were citizens who had jobs in law enforcement, like in records or dispatch and the like. I said, what was the difference? What's the difference between a sworn personnel and non-sworn personnel? And I found out all of us in law enforcement, all of us in government, and all three branches swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution. I wanted to know why. Then I found out why. It's because Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution requires us by law, by the supreme law of the land, to swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution. And I became very disenchanted with government and law enforcement because we never keep our oath. We never study what the oath means, why we take the oath, and to whom do we owe its fulfillment? And that really changed my life, because I discovered the Constitution. I discovered American idealism, and I discovered the truth. And I was completely converted to the Constitution and to our founding fathers and to American ideals. And I decided that I would start a movement called the Constitutional Sheriffs. And in 2010, I started the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And indeed, I travel the country teaching sheriffs and peace officers and all public officials the importance of the Constitution, the importance of our oath of office, and how we have a moral and spiritual and lawful obligation to protect liberty all across this country. Other than that, I'm not very busy.
You know, I talk a lot about in the Declaration of Independence, it finished with, "We pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." And how that concept of sacred honor seems to be missing in so much of today. The idea of you take an oath and you honor that oath. But the thing I've been talking about lately is how the federal government treats the states as vassals. When I was researching my book, I found a website that listed all of the executive branch departments and agencies. And do you realize that they listed each of the 50 states as a department of the federal government?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Well, my Supreme Court case makes it very clear that we are not.
Absolutely. In fact, reading from the case, and by the way, I refer to it as Prinz versus USA because if people search for it, they'll find it with Prinz. They won't find it. But I you know, yeah, yes.
You'll still get it if you put Mac v. US.
Okay.
It'll still come up.
Excellent.
But so, that's okay because Prinz, P-R-I-N-T-Z, is associated with the case more than mine. I don't and I found out why. I asked Prinz about it once. He goes, "I don't know. I didn't have anything to do with it." I said, "Well, I'm just curious because he knows that I was the first one to file. He filed about 5 weeks after I did. But then another 5 sheriffs nationwide also joined the lawsuit."
Well, it's the same thing. It's the U.S. was the first nation in the world to pass legislation banning the slave trade. But the British version, which was passed after ours, went into effect before ours, which is why they are the first country to ban the slave trade, and we're the second. We passed it first. Same thing. But reading from that opinion, you have a nice little booklet talking about it. It says, "It is an essential attribute of the state that this," sorry, try it again. "It is an essential attribute of the state's retained sovereignty that they remain independent and autonomous within their sphere of authority." Now, compare that to what's been going on recently, whether it be everything from the vaccine mandates to the Attorney General ordering the DOJ to investigate parents at school board meetings. Are these not examples of ignoring the spheres of influence and just the federal government taking over everything?
Yeah, well, really what we have lost over the past several decades is the role of the states to keep the federal government in check. And that's where we've really lost it, because you could ask all your viewers and listeners one simple question: who has the lawful, moral, and legal obligation to enforce the 10th Amendment? The 10th Amendment is all about state autonomy and states' rights and state sovereignty. To think that there's a branch or part of the federal government, or that the Congress or president are going to enforce that for us, is just nonsense. They're not going to. We, the states, have to do it. We, the states, form the federal government. It's our job to keep them in check. And the three separate branches are just as important as the autonomy of the states. And my decision, the Prinz Mac decision, makes it very clear that we are the check and balance on federal authority, and that we have an obligation to do just that.
And sadly, the states are failing. You know, I've been going around doing a talk on the 10th Amendment and the invalidity of these mandates, of these federal overreaches. I do mention the Prinz decision, but more than that, I go all the way back to Marbury versus Madison, and the Supremacy Clause, and understanding that only the laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are the supreme law of the land, and that anything Congress does beyond what the Constitution authorizes is void. It's empty. It's meaningless. And those aren't my words. Those are the words of Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court of the United States. But we have this infringement on state rights. And it seems I'm seeing so many governors and so many attorneys general that are, it seems like their only reaction is to go begging to the federal courts for relief from the federal executive, rather than realizing, no, they are sovereign, they are independent, they are autonomous entities within the powers they haven't delegated to the United States. How do we as citizens deal with that? How do we protect ourselves from this overreach if our states are not doing their job?
Well, I always say that the bottom line on all of this is the sheriff. And then we do it county by county. And hopefully the states will get on board as we teach them that we are not puppets of a ventriloquist Congress. And that's also a quote from my decision. Scalia had quite the sense of humor. And so I really like that line. The states are not puppets of a ventriloquist Congress. We have the obligation to put liberty first. We have an obligation to stand in the gap. We have an obligation to interpose on behalf of the people to make sure they're not being victimized by an out-of-control government. My case was based on government overreach. That's what it addressed. It keeps the federal government in check. If we, the states, the sheriffs, the counties, the city councils, county commissioners, county attorneys, so on and so forth, all of local officials have an obligation to protect liberty, to protect civil rights, human rights, our God-given rights. It is our job to perpetuate liberty and our unalienable rights first and foremost. Our job might entail writing tickets and arresting drunk drivers and investigating murders and rapes and aggravated assaults and other violations of the law, and especially to create an atmosphere of peace in the community where people can come and go as they please. That is our job. However, our primary function of being here is to keep the peace by one, safeguarding liberty. In the United States of America, what we have forgotten horribly is that liberty comes first. You as a patrol officer, you as a chief of police, you as a city council, county commission, you as the elected sheriff, all of us have the responsibility to put liberty first. And these other things like traffic laws could never be more important or supersede the Bill of Rights. And if we would just understand and memorize, not word for word, the Bill of Rights, you can if you want, but memorize what each amendment is about. Like the first one has five principles of liberty in it, and there's about 28 total principles of liberty that government is not allowed to touch. This is a list of the untouchables by government. Government cannot touch these God-given rights that we listed in the Bill of Rights. And that's who it was for. It was for government. These are the rules for you that you cannot violate. These are the rights that you can never touch, alter, change, or legislate against. And so now after 20,000 gun control laws, you would think that it meant just the opposite. But we have, first of all, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, right to peaceably assemble, and petition government for redress of grievances, or we get to complain to government and they're supposed to redress those and in fact respond, but they hardly ever do. Yeah. So this is the thing. The Bill of Rights comes first in the execution of our jobs. And that means every patrol officer, detective, whatever, I don't care what position you have. It is our duty to protect liberty first.
You know, you talk about the duty and the responsibility. And as a former sheriff, that's an excellent point of view. As a citizen, it's also my responsibility to hold the sheriff and the other elected officials, everybody from dog catcher to president of the United States, accountable to that oath they take. Now, what I did is I confused my sheriff. I moved to Tennessee about 6 years ago, and I set up a meeting with my sheriff, and I think the sheriff was expecting me to come complaining and ranting about something, and I actually sat down and said, here's what I want. When I pick up the phone and dial 911, and one of your deputies shows up, I want to know they've been trained that their first responsibility is to protect the rights of everyone involved. That's, yes, you have laws, you have state laws, you have federal laws, but if you're protecting the rights, not my rights, the whoever is there, everyone's rights, my family's rights, then to me, you're a sheriff I can trust. I refer to, you know, Washington, D.C. and our state houses as the battle lines in the war for liberty. My home county is my home base. This is supposed to be my safe spot. And if I can't be safe here, if I can't be sure my family is safe here, how can I go off and fight the battles elsewhere? Now, that approach, I got a very good response from my sheriff, and I made a point of saying, listen, sheriff, if you do that, I will support you. You need me to write, I'm a constitutional scholar. You need position papers. You need someone at a press conference. You need someone to testify in front of a committee. I will be happy to, as long as you are fulfilling that oath and protecting the rights of the citizens of this county, I will support you. And I think that's something that has been lost a lot lately. Law enforcement has been so vilified that, A, the American people have become too lazy to hold them accountable. And then, right. B, they simply vilify them so that, you know, all of these law enforcement officers are painted with the brush of what is arguably a few really bad actors that, for the most part, hopefully have been caught and punished. Is my approach workable as a sheriff? If I were to, if you were still a sheriff and I were to come to your office and have that discussion and understand I'm asking something from you, I'm offering you something in return, is that something do you think would work in other counties throughout the nation?
Yeah, it's going to that's going to work. It's been working. It's not going to work every time. And I want to make that clear. We're not going to get all the sheriffs in America. We're not going to get 3,080 sheriffs to all be constitutional and start upholding, defending the Constitution, because many of them don't care about that. All they care about is their Democrat or Republican party, and that they'll fall in line with their political dogma and agendas and their platforms. That's really sad, because Washington even warned us that a two-party system would destroy our country. And indeed, it is. But I will say this. The sheriffs have an obligation simply to put the principles of liberty first in the execution of their jobs. And it doesn't matter who the sheriff is, if he will study this. And in fact, every American should study this Supreme Court case. Every one of them should get that little booklet that you got off my website at cspoa.org, because it's an amazing document. It's very powerful. It's the most powerful 10th Amendment decision in the history of America, without question, because this really says some things in there. It says that states will, the whole purpose of all of this is that the states will remain accountable to their own citizens and not the federal government. And that, quote, Scalia, who wrote this, did a terrific job of just taking us through a history lesson. He quotes the Founding Fathers. He quotes the Federalist Papers, of all things. He quotes the Constitution itself, and he quotes some other historical jurisprudence of the Supreme Court and other courts. He's simply taking us through this history lesson that states Federalist Paper 51 that's in the case. Hence, a double security arises to the rights of the people. The different governments will control each other, end quote. So it's showing that the states being a different government and the counties being a different government and the sheriff being in charge of a different government are responsible and obligated to defend liberty and to defend the people therein from all the incursions and abuses of any government, whether they be local or state or federal. We have an obligation and a duty. We are duty bound. We are sworn to do this, to uphold and defend the Constitution, to protect people's rights, to stand in the gap, to interpose on behalf of our people.
You know, it's almost like that separation of powers that we all learned in school between the three branches of the federal government is more than that. And I say that facetiously because I teach that class, that separation of powers. It's not just the three branches. It's the three tiers of government. The willingness of them to protect them, their own powers against encroachment, which we have lost. And, you know, there are a few people standing up. Now, I did mention that we've got governors and attorneys general that are threatening to sue. I'm waiting to find
it. Wait. Let me add that. And I forgot to say that sooner. This thing about suing in federal court to stop federal abuse, the decks are stacked against us as soon as you start, because these judges get promoted by supporting the president or other politicians who will give them promotions to higher courts or the Supreme Court. The whole deck is stacked against us. And this is what you alluded to earlier, and I wanted to make sure I reiterated it. We don't need to ask permission from courts to keep our oath of office. We don't need to. In fact, it's impossible for all these abuses that are going on in our country today and that have been going on for decades, it's impossible to get them all to the Supreme Court. There's not time enough. There's not money enough. They only take 1% of the cases that cross their desk. What happens to all the other abuses? Yep. Well, you know, sometimes the lower case courts take them, and sometimes they never get to any court, and that they're supposed to be handled at the local level. Folks, we need local governments, judges, sheriffs especially, state legislatures, city councils, county commissioners, and these the state legislature and the governor to simply tell the federal government, no, we are not doing that here. I don't have to take you to court. I'm not going to take you to court. I'm telling you, this will never be enforced here. Not by you, not by anyone. This is Texas. We owe you nothing. You're not in charge of us. We will not do vax mandates. We will not do mask mandates. We will not pay you taxes. Everything you're doing, federal government, is out of control. We will take our tax money intended for you, and we will put it in defense of our own border because you are failing to do your job. And boy, I can't wait for the first governor and state legislature to do that. That's where I'm moving. But also, there's a lot of good sheriffs in Texas, and there's a lot of good places where people can move there. I don't like Arizona, where I live now, or Texas too much because it's too close to the border, and the border is completely out of control and completely controlled and operated by the cartels. And this is such a dangerous position. But it's penetrating the entire country. And that's why I believe without question that one Mr. Biden and his staff should be held accountable for treason. They should be arrested for treason.
Well, they certainly have violated their oath of office. But like I always give the example of you're basically going to the federal government to protect you from the federal government. It's like the Dallas Cowboys begging the New York Giants to protect them from a bad call. It just makes no sense. But there, I did see one occasion. Now, again, I've seen, was it the governor, I think, of Alabama said they won't use any state, no state officers allowed to enforce any vax mandate, which to me, it's a half measure. You're saying we aren't going to participate, but you're not telling them no. The one thing I just saw.
And they're not doing it either. They're not going to do it there either. We're not going to participate. But you're not going to do it here either. We will make sure you don't.
I saw a line, an article about, we're talking about Texas. Apparently the UN was trying to tell Texas that they had to go green. And Governor Abbott's response was, pound sand.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for Governor Abbott and Governor Lee here in Tennessee and all of these governors that keep claiming to be for rights and liberty to look at Washington, D.C. and tell them to go pound sand. You're not going to do it. Not only are we not going to help you, we won't allow you, and we will we will arrest you for violating state law if you send an agent here to do that. The only time I've heard that rhetoric is in 2003, Senator or then Governor Brownback of Kansas claimed he would do that for Second Amendment protections. But again, the first time the Fed showed up, they folded, you know, he folded like a cheap suit. So,
well, I can tell you there's been sheriffs that have taken a strong stand against the federal government. Sheriff Brad Rogers in Elkhart County, Indiana, threatened to arrest FDA agents who were harassing an Amish farmer because he doesn't pasteurize his milk. And they came in to the county to go after this guy time and time and time again. And finally, Rogers wrote him a letter, an email, and said, if you come back to this county to harass this guy and you don't have duly signed warrants based on probable cause signed by a competent judge, I will arrest you for trespassing and any other charges I can. They left that man alone, and they haven't been back in over 10 years. So I also did a similar thing. We had a bridge washout in the northeast part of the county. The Army Corps of Engineers and EPA came in, said that we couldn't touch the bridge. I wasn't in charge of fixing the bridge. I wasn't involved. But then the county finally, after 10 months of waiting for the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers, they voted unanimously just to fix the bridge. So then the Army Corps of Engineers and EPA threatened to arrest the county commissioners. Threatened to arrest the county commissioners, arrest the maintenance workers, charge us $50,000 for every day we're in violation, and then also jail. So then I called them in. I said, you're not arresting anybody in my county. If you try to arrest anybody, I will arrest you. So I never told them to leave, but the next day they left. We fixed the bridge. We didn't pay a dime in fines. Nobody went to jail, and we served the people in our county. That is the type of service that needs to happen nationwide. And that we tell these bureaucrats, they are not in charge of our counties or our people, and that we will do what's right, the federal government notwithstanding.
Well, Sheriff, that's excellent. And that's what we need from our sheriffs. That's what we need to look for when we're deciding who to vote for sheriff. Now, I've only got a couple minutes left, but can you tell my listeners where they can find out more about you, the CSPOA, and that the booklet and other resources you have, both for the sheriffs and that people can use to help educate their sheriff?
Well, I have about 7 or 8 books I've written, and they're readily available on our website. And this is a whole thing. The whole thing about the CSPOA is that we are a partnership with the people. We, the people, working with sheriffs to create civil disobedience, to create noncompliance, and to create an atmosphere of personal and individual liberty. You must have a relationship with your sheriff. Volunteer to be on his posse, volunteer to work with him, and become a member of the CSPOA at cspoa.org. Folks, this is what it's all about, working together to create the barriers against the encroachments of the national authority. The federal government is not our friend. They have created an atmosphere of complete communist takeover of our country. They are the greatest threat to our God-given constitutional American Republic. We must stand against it. We must restore our Constitution, county by county, state by state.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Sheriff. Before I go, I want to remind my listeners, not only check out cspoa.org, join up, become a member, help support the work that Sheriff Mack and his team are doing. Also, as an America Out Loud listener, we're giving you 20% off at healthycell.com. You know, we need to keep our bodies healthy if we're going to be in this fight, and there's a new way of doing vitamins. So check out healthycell.com/outloud, get 20% off your first order, and live a healthier lifestyle so that you can live as a free citizen in a free republic.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You know, I don't know about you, I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation with Sheriff Richard Mack. You know, the man has such passion for protecting liberty. He's got the background and the knowledge and the information. If you get the chance to see him, to listen to him speak, I would certainly recommend it. I'd also recommend going to the website cspoa.org. That's for the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Go to cspoa.org, read one of his books, support them if you can. They're doing some wonderful work. As he was closing out, he reminded me, though, back on Independence Day, I wrote an article called The Redeclaration of Independence, where I basically looked at the Declaration of Independence using Washington, D.C. in replacement of King George, and it was scary. It was scary just how much Washington, D.C. in 2021 resembles King George in 1776. So you may want to follow up with that and see, educate ourselves that we are not vassals of the government in Washington. So as I want to continue on with this idea of, you know, how do we stand up for our liberty and how do we hold those who have taken an oath to support the Constitution of the United States, many of them of their state as well, and how do we hold them accountable? Because there are certainly plenty of examples of a lack of accountability from these men and women. I found this article. Apparently, the FDA has this approval panel, and they've approved a dosage of the vaccines for the quote-unquote vaccines that are not really vaccines. I had to redefine vaccine to make it a vaccine. Approving them for children between 5 and 11. And it was a unanimous vote, right? 17-0 with one abstention to allow this to be given to children 5 to 11 years old. Well, what does that have to do with our oaths to liberty? Well, apparently, several doctors were on the panel. Several of the experts, well, they voiced concerns. You know, they say that, according to Dr. Rubin, the data shows that the vaccine works and is pretty safe, but yet we're worried about a side effect that we can't measure yet, but it's probably real. Oh, so they think it's pretty safe. Pretty safe. That's a nice, fine, scientific defined number. But they're worried about a side effect that they don't know, they can't measure it. They don't know what it is yet, but they believe it's real. And then this, he goes on to say later Dr. Rubin says, but we're never going to learn about how safe this vaccine is unless we start giving it. That's just the way it goes. So your children age 5 to 11, American children age 5 to 11, well, they'll just have to take the vaccine to see if it's safe or not, to learn just how safe it is. That's just the way it goes. And if there are long-term medical ramifications, well, you know, I mean, what's next? Are they going to say you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs? we're talking about children here. And again, we are talking about a disease with a 98.6% survival rate and a group of children with a 99.8% survival rate or better. And we're going to take this drug, this biologic with a side effect they cannot measure, that they don't know for sure just how safe long-term this is, and we're going to experiment on our kids. And those are the vaccines that those in government are pushing on everyone, demanding that they take. That they don't even want to give you the exemptions you're legally allowed. Now, again, first of all, I find it very interesting. If this vaccine was nearly as safe and effective as they keep claiming, why do they have to fight to get people to take it? You know, when Apple came out with the iPhone and said, look at the goodies it has. Look at how great it is. Look at how safe it is. People flocked to it. If the vaccine is that good, why must you bully and intimidate people to get them to take it? Now, they are required by law. Again, remember, this is still an emergency use authorization-based product. This has not been approved by the FDA. The FDA approved the Pfizer, the Comirnaty-branded vaccine under that Pfizer has developed. That is not available in the United States. Pfizer refuses to release the Comirnaty-branded vaccine in the United States as long as the EUA is still in place for their other one. That's their own statement. So this is an emergency use authorization. You're required to have, one of the things you can have is a religious objection. And I know a lot of people are looking, how do I avoid this? How do I get out of this? And they talk about this exemption, that exemption, and very rarely they simply say, by the way, government, you have no legal authority to mandate this. You try to stick a needle in my arm and we're going to have an issue. So a lot of people are looking to exemptions, and one of the exemptions is a religious exemption. Well, apparently, if you're a federal employee or a federal contractor and you submit a religious exemption to the vaccine mandate, you're going to get a detailed questionnaire to fill out. What are some of the questions they're asking? How long have you held the religious belief underlying your objection? They may ask if and when you've received any vaccinations as an adult. And then ask, if you do not have a religious objection to the use of all vaccines, please explain why your objection is limited to particular vaccines. If they ask if there are any other medications or products that you do not use because of the religious belief underlying your objection. Would complying with the COVID-19 vaccination requirement substantially burden your religious exercise? If so, please explain how. And to just further prove how this criminal government in Washington, D.C., they don't even follow their own rules. See, generally, under Title VII, an employer should assume that a request for religious accommodation is based on sincerely held religious beliefs. Now, if the employer has an objective basis for questioning either the religious nature or the sincerity of the belief, the employer would be justified in making a limited factual inquiry and seeking additional supporting information. This is not what the federal government is doing, and it's not what they're requiring their contractors to do. They're simply saying, hey, you want an election? It's a scam until you prove otherwise. Rather than what the law requires is that they have to assume, if you say you have a religious exemption, a sincerely held belief, that you actually have a sincerely held belief. They have to have good reason to question that. See, how do you live in a world where they don't even follow their own rules? Well, the answer is you find somebody that can protect, that help you protect yourself. It's important. We need to not look for other people to protect us. We need people that will help us protect ourselves. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the dystopian future that we're being warned about shouldn't surprise anyone. We have police officers, firefighters that are threatening to walk off the job. We have truckers that say they can't perform the work because they're being laid off for not having a vaccine. And then this article popped up. I didn't even know this. Do you know there's an American Ambulance Association? Yeah, apparently there's an assembly of ambulance operators. And they're warning that they are facing crippling workforce shortages and their ability to respond to 911 services may be limited because they cannot get staff because of these vaccine mandates. Now, again, we're talking a vaccine. For a disease, you have a 98.6% or better chance of surviving. A vaccine that has been proven not to prevent you from getting COVID or from spreading COVID if you get it, even if you're vaccinated. A vaccine that does appear to help mitigate some of the symptoms, but does not provide long-term immunization. A vaccine that is still experimental, that has proven to have serious side effects, including thousands of people dead. And now, for all that, we're going to basically fire teachers, law, police officers, firefighters, and now EMTs and ambulance drivers. You talk about a dystopian future. Imagine a scenario. You or a loved one is seriously injured. You're having a heart attack or some other medical emergency, and you call 911. And they say, well, we'll be there, but it's going to be a while because we just plain run out of ambulances. We don't have enough drivers for the ambulances because of a political vaccination mandate. The vaccination mandates have nothing to do with medical science. They are a political move. They are turning America into a dystopia. They're accelerating the rate at which dystopia becomes our future. And what are you to do? Well, as Sheriff Mack was telling you, one of the things you have to do is make sure you have a sheriff that will protect your rights, protect liberty, uphold their oath to support the Constitution. They take the oath, they have to uphold it. And if they, my opinion, if your sheriff doesn't uphold the Constitution of your state in the United States, they need to be fired and you need to find another one. And I have a perfect example why right here. Now, if you've been following what's been going on in Loudoun County, talk about a dumpster fire. Oh my God. First of all, I'm glad my daughter never went to public school, but I'm really glad she never went to this school in Loudoun County, Virginia. See, the Commonwealth Attorney for Loudoun County wanted to jail a father who was charged with two misdemeanors. Now, why? Well, understand, this father found out that his daughter was sexually assaulted in school in large part because of an insane school board policy that says girls are not allowed to be allowed only girls in the girls' room. That if a boy wears a skirt and says he's a girl, he can go into the girls' room. And this boy has sexually assaulted two girls. So his father found out, A, that his daughter was sexually assaulted at school by a pervert boy in the girls' room because the school would not protect his daughter. He found that this was not the first time this had happened, that the school district, the school board, had covered up and simply moved him to another school. Needless to say, when he went to the school board, well, he was just a bit upset. And he was charged with two misdemeanors. Now, misdemeanors are defined not even as crimes. Although we tend to think of them as minor crimes. Their original definition was bad behavior that didn't rise to a state of a crime. But we're talking misdemeanors. I'm actually surprised he left it, that's all he did. But what I find absolutely abhorrent is the same Commonwealth attorney, Abuda Bibaraj, sorry if I'm mispronouncing it, and I do apologize. It's not meant as an insult. I'm just having a hard time wrapping my tongue around that name. The same Commonwealth attorney that wanted to prosecute this man for being upset at the school board did not only didn't protect his daughter, they were criminally negligent. They were in effect accessories after the fact, because they knew of this predator and they did nothing about it. But you know what? This is the same Commonwealth attorney that passed on the prosecution of that boy. Yeah. So here you have a Commonwealth attorney who is not going to prosecute a serial sexual assaulter, but he's going to go after the dad that's pissed because the school board, rather than dealing with the little pervert when they first found out about it, simply shuffled him off somewhere else to pervert again, to assault another victim. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't seem fair. We'll come to the rescue. Loudoun County Sheriff. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office says they refused to comply with the request by the school superintendent to turn the police force into a let's get the parents force. You see, apparently the superintendent, who denied there was any record of the sexual assault, the first sexual assault, apparently sent an email to the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office asking for a 5-person quick reaction force, multiple undercover deputies, and a special operations team on standby for the district to utilize for school board meetings. Now, has there been one report of physical assault or a serious threat? Apparently not, because there have been charges been filed. The only thing we have are two misdemeanors. And according to Sheriff Mike Chapman, there are already security measures in place, including 10 armed security personnel and magnetometers for people entering the building. So the sheriff said, you know what? He said, quote, your request is extraordinary and would likely constitute LCSO's commitment of a minimal of approximately 65 sworn deputies. Despite this, you fail to provide any justification for such a manpower intensive request. Yeah, I'd say it's extraordinary. I'd say it's outrageous. So he refused. He said, no, we're not doing that. You come to us with a real threat, we'll deal with it. Apparently, there was another document that summarized a phone call that Chapman had, as and he suggested that he wasn't satisfied with how the June 22nd meeting went. He didn't want his deputies involved in the school board suppressing of parents by beefing up its security without consultation from LCSO. He said the school board is firing people up and calling LCSO to clean it up. He said, no, this is good. I want a sheriff that's going to stand against that. So with all the mess that is going on in Loudoun County, Virginia, there is good news. You apparently have a sheriff that's not going along with the craziness. You know, you have a school board that is basically treating parents as an impediment to their agenda, that is more than willing to allow their children to be assaulted and used for social experimentation. But at least your sheriff isn't going to act as the Gestapo backing them up. And I'm glad to see that. We need more men and women at the county level, in the sheriff's department, that take their oath to the Constitution seriously. Yes, we need them at the state and federal level as well, the national level, but we need to start with the counties. As I described in the interview with Sheriff Mack, our counties are our home base. If we are not safe there, if our rights are not protected there, well then, where are our rights going to be protected? How can you go out and fight in Washington, D.C. or your state house if you're not safe in your own hometown, your county, your city, your neighborhood? We need to hire people that will protect our rights. Now, we also need to educate ourselves. I made quick mention in the interview that I have put together a 10th Amendment / mandate talk. Now, I've been doing it around in my area of Middle Tennessee. I want to ask you a couple questions. One, would you like to hear it? If there's interest in it, maybe I'll do it online. I'm sure most people are not going to come to Middle Tennessee, and you're not going to want to drag me out to where you are. But sure, I will do this online if there's interest. So if you will, just do me a favor, head to constitutionstudy.com, and you can request that I do it. Just go to constitutionstudy.com. On the menu, you'll see under events, you'll see if you hover over it, you'll see request a speaker. Fill out that form. Just mark that you want to do it on the web. And under topic, just pick 10th Amendment. If there's enough interest to it, I'll set it up. I think this is a very important topic, understanding that that we are not vassals, that we have set limits on the federal government, and how do we enforce them? So please do that. If you'd like to hear more about that, you can go to the website and check it out. I also want to let you know I'm going to be in Tampa. Right now it's the 9th, 10th, and 11th. I've just added the 11th to my schedule. You can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/tour. That's the Knowing Your Rights tour. I'm still doing that. It's wonderful. This is a full hour that really looks at understanding some of your rights and how they've been trampled by mandates from the federal government, the state government, city governments, and what you can do about that. So if you want to find out more, again, constitutionstudy.com/tour, you can find out where I'm going to be. I'm mostly right now in the Tampa area. I'm still looking for venues, though. If you are in Florida and you'd like me to come speak to you, well, again, go to Constitution Study under events, click request a speaker, and just tell me that's what you want me to come do. If I can make it happen on the schedule, I'd be more than happy to do that. In fact, anybody between Nashville and anywhere in Florida, if you want me to come, fill out that form, let me know. I'd be happy to meet you. Friends, neighbors, a political group, a non-political group, a patriot group, I don't really much care. I'm just loving the opportunity to educate Americans around the country. Now, I've got one more thing I want to let you guys know about. I've recently announced what I'm doing is an online constitution study. Those of you who've read my book or have followed some of the work done, I started the constitution study with a group in a public library in upstate New York. And I've had lots of requests for this type of training. And I'm finally able to announce I'm going to make it happen early in 2021. Now, you can find out more. Go to constitutionstudy.com/study to find out more. Here's what I'm going to offer you. I'm going to give the first three sessions on the Bill of Rights absolutely free. That's right. You go to constitutionstudy.com/study. You sign up. You can join the first three sessions where we'll be covering the Bill of Rights absolutely free. And I'll even give you a digital copy of my book, The Bill of Rights, as my gift. But again, absolutely free. There's no commitment. We will be doing a live Zoom call. We will be doing this the way I do my studies. So we'll be reading a clause. I may give some background and history on it. And then we'll discuss it. We'll debate it. Ask questions. Offer different point of views. Really have an interactive study is what I'm trying to do with this. And you get to join in. Now, if you can't make the live session, that's fine. I'm actually going to record them and make them available absolutely free on constitutionscholars.com. So depending on the interest in registration will tell me how many live events I'm going to do. But I'm always going to take one of them, and I'm going to make sure that that becomes recorded and available to you absolutely free on constitutionscholars.com. So you can always go back. If you miss a session, you can watch it. If you just want to go back and review, you can do that as well. And then you'll actually get a discount if you want to do the rest of the Constitution study. So again, you can find out more. That's constitutionstudy.com/study. I'm also considering doing a couple of other events online. If you would like me to speak at your events, please put in the request. If we can't do it in person, maybe we can do it online. I have the tools. I have the resources. My passion for educating the American people just seems to know no bounds. I've been having so much fun meeting people, talking with people, answering their questions, engaging. And we have this wonderful technology. I use Zoom because so far it's working really well. But this technology that says we don't have to be in the same room. We don't have to be in the same location. We can still share this educational opportunity. And I'm excited to share it with you. Again, find out more at constitutionstudy.com. And if you have any questions, by all means, ask at constitutionstudy.com. There's an Ask a Question tab in the menu. Click that, ask your question. I'll do my best to answer it. I am still doing my live Q&As. I'm doing them twice a month, the second and fourth Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Central Time. That's 8 Eastern Time and 5 Pacific Time. If you want to join, if you want to watch it as a live stream, it's on YouTube, Twitter, Rumble. It's also available on the website. Just go to constitutionstudy.com. You can watch it right there on the website. If you want to participate more vigorously, in other words, rather than just typing in your question, if you actually want to talk with me, you can register again at constitutionstudy.com. Because this is all because of that need to educate. Thomas Jefferson said, if you wish to be ignorant and free, you wish what never was and never will be. That is my passion. That is my goal. And that's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, 2020 was very tough. We didn't have a lot of interaction. 2021 has been better. I really want the rest of 2021 and 2022 to be the time when the American people stood up, looked their governments in the eye and said, no, we're not your vassals. We're not your sheep. We're not your subjects. We are the masters of government. Now, all of my shows go to podcast typically a day or two after the broadcast is heard. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or iHeart, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. And do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts for me, subscribe, rate the show, and help secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.